this program is intended for a blind and print impaired audience. Hello, this is Nicole Hunter from the North Carolina Reading Service. For the next half hour, I will be reading to you from Essence Magazine, November 2019 edition, and this is actually the last week for November, actually. And so on the cover is Jody Turner Smith. We haven't gone over her cover story yet, but we're going to go over it today. Yay. So the first article that we're going to cover is The Receipts, The Journalist's Journalist. Here's how April Ryan built a thriving 30-year career. Political journalist April Ryan has racked up 30 years in news sectors that have few women in general and even fewer black women. If career longevity is a skill, then Ryan is a master. The White House correspondent and D.C. Bureau Chief for American Urban Radio Networks continues to ask the tough questions as she advocates for freedom of the press and acts as a role model for journalists of color everywhere. Number one, she's an HBCU grad. When Ryan attended Morgan State University, she realized that her gift of gab and natural curiosity would make a broadcast journalism career the perfect fit for her. She eventually nabbed a spot on the college radio station and felt an adrenaline rush. Number two, she's not afraid to ask for more. Early in Ryan's career, she worked as an announcer at Baltimore's V103 radio station, where she interviewed Johnny Cochran. When she felt ready for a promotion, she asked the station to create a news director position that had not existed before. Number three, she plays the long game. A freelance opportunity with American Urban Radio Networks turned into an offer for her to become the Washington Bureau Chief and White House correspondent at age 29. She has spent more than 20 years covering four U.S. presidents, starting with the Clinton administration, and became one of the only three members of the White House Correspondents Association to ever serve on its board in the organization's more than 100-year history. Number four, she has a few side hustles. Like so many journalists, Ryan has more than one source of income. At the beginning of her career, she moved from one television station to another while freelancing for other networks and radio stations. Today, she secures her bag with several revenue streams. In addition to her post with American Urban Radio Networks, she's an author of three books, a CNN political analyst, and a lecturer. And number five, she inspired hashtag Black Women at Work. Ryan is one of the women who inspired this hashtag, which went viral on Twitter in March 2017. On it, Black women were encouraged to share their workplace horror stories. Ryan also penned an eye-opening op-ed in the Washington Post last November about her experience being a Black woman reporting on the Trump presidency. Number six, she does the legwork. Working in the White House motivated Ryan to write her first book. In 2001, she signed up for the Odyssey program at Johns Hopkins University to support her desire to write a long-form narrative. 14 years later, The Presidency in Black and White was published. And number seven, she embraces representation. Ryan once noted that she was the only Black woman correspondent at the White House until Yumichi Alcindor started in 2018. The veteran reporter gives back to her community by mentoring young journalists and helping them develop their talent for broadcasting. So let's go on to the second article that we're going to cover today, and it's titled Harriet's North Star. Cynthia Erivo brings the life story of Harriet Tubman to glorious light. And this actually came out in theaters as of, I believe it was November the 1st. No, I think it was November the 1st when it actually came out in U.S. theaters nationwide. So as a Black actress standing at just 5 feet, 1 inch tall, Cynthia Erivo knows what it's like to be underestimated. even with the Tony Award for her powerhouse performance as Celie in the Broadway's The Color Purple, the musical. So when producer Deborah Martin Chase asked her to play Harriet Tubman in the long-anticipated biopic Harriet, Erivo was determined to prove herself deserving of this once-in-a-lifetime opportunity. And again, the film actually came out November 1st, directed by Kazi Lemons, depicts the life of the revered abolitionist who freed more than 300 slaves, including herself. There's always a part of me that's like, am I equipped enough to tell the story? Or am I strong enough for it? Erivo admits days after Harriet's world premiere at the Toronto International Film Festival. But I have taken on big challenges throughout my career, and the enormity of this role made me learn into it more because I knew it wasn't going to be easy. And when something isn't easy, it becomes even more special. She's keenly aware that after decades of waiting, this is the first ever feature film about Tubman. Helmed by a black female filmmaker, it's also coming out during a critical time in our history. When there is a renewed interest in her story, just 2 years ago, the Harriet Tubman Underground Railroad Visitor Center was established in Dorchester County, Maryland. And supporters of the abolitionist's courageous legacy have lobbied for a new $20 bill with Tubman's face on it. Soon after Erivo's first conversation with Martin Chase more than 3 years ago, she threw herself into preparation for the role. Her months of research included looking at old photos of the abolitionists and reading everything she could about her life beyond the Underground Railroad. She wanted to capture her body language and facial expressions and learn more about her heartbreaking relationship with husband John. The actress also worked out every morning before she arrived on set, so as to match her body strength with that of Tubman. She had many discussions with Lemons about how to portray Tubman singing as a cappella songs are used in the film to eliminate some of the freedom fighters' more or most intimate emotions and conversations. I desperately wanted to show her humanity, not just her heroism, Erivo says. I desperately wanted to show her as a woman. I don't think we know enough about that. She was a fully realized woman who had love in her life and heartbreak and family she cared for and desperately wanted to be with. That was what drove her. The London-based, New York City-based star also meditated and prayed each day to portray the larger-than-life woman who herself leaned on faith to get her through difficult times. Sometimes showing your faith brings embarrassment because of where we are in the world now, Erivo reflects. But Harriet's faith is what kept her alive. I don't believe I could have been here without something much larger than me giving me health and strength and putting wonderful opportunities in my life, especially when I look back at the last 4 or 5 years. It was just last year that the Royal Academy of Dramatic Art alum made her big screen debut, Bad Times in the El Royale, and had a breakout role in Widows. Now she braces for the world to see her as a leading lady in a part that would be significant even for a more seasoned actress. As the activist, Erivo dons a cowboy hat and carries a gun. As beginning in 1850, she leads hundreds of slaves on foot through dangerous terrain from Maryland to Pennsylvania. Erivo recognizes Tubman's desire for freedom by any means necessary is particularly resonant today. With black women especially fighting to protect basic rights like reproductive choice and a living wage, we're in a dangerous place right now when people who have nothing to do with us are making decisions about our lives and our bodies, she says. We're watching changes that were made for our freedom getting rolled back. Having done this movie, I feel more impassioned than ever about making sure that we as women are able to preserve our rights. After receiving the validation of a standing ovation at the Urban World Film Festival last September, for her bold portrayal, Erivo hopes to pay this feeling forward and show young black women that they matter. Sometimes I think I am literally the smallest, most unimportant thing in the room, Erivo says. But Harriet was small, like me, and was able to do so much. Playing her taught me that my actions can change the world. I want young women to feel like they, too, have earned a place in this world, and they should use it as well. And now to our cover story, Enchanting. In the Black Lives Matter-inspired love story, Queen and Slim, new star Jodie Turner-Smith takes our breath away. When it was announced last year that Lena Waithe and Melina Matuskas had tapped a relatively unknown Jodie Turner-Smith to star in their film Queen and Slim, playing opposite Daniel Kaluuya, fresh from his Oscar-nominated role in Get Out, the internet began chattering about the striking British-Jamaican actress. Some remembered Turner-Smith from her star turn as Melantha Jurel in Syfy's Night Flyers and her appearance in Zayn Malik's Pillow Talk video. But in Queen and Slim, directed by Mutakas, written by Waithe from a story by James Frey, the actress is poised to make her mark as a leading lady. In the flick, there is a scene in which Turner Smith glides slowly into frame after her uncle's girlfriend, played by Posey's India Moore, takes out her braids so as to be less recognizable in the authorities chasing her. At Turner Smith's arrival, the audible gasp from the audience at a nearly screening dispelled any notion that the actress was someone who would shrink into the background. When the film hits theaters November 27th, viewers won't be able to take their eyes off of her. Turner Smith has a powerful presence, a captivating beauty whose sultry energy makes her a scene stealer. She's thoughtful when speaking, and while she's began her career playing in a siren on HBO's True Blood and popped up in projects like TNT's The Last Ship, it was only a year ago that she caught our attention in the adaptation of the George R.R. Martin novella Night Flyers. The fact that I was cast in a show to play a female lead and I'm the dark-skinned black woman with short hair, it's so incredible, she said of that series. The part was a confidence boost as well. It just gave me a little bit of wind beneath my wings to really go and make this my own, she added. It was Waithe's written word that drew the 33-year-old to the role of Queen, a rebellious lawyer turned renegade on the run. I fell maddeningly in love with the script, she says, still buzzing from a recent attendance at the Burning Man Festival and preparing to be a relaxing birthday. And Melina is a force to be reckoned with. Honestly, I don't think anybody's going to mess with her. Though she appreciates being in the capable hands of Matuskas, who directed Beyoncé's Formation, and Waithe, who's the only black woman ever to win an Emmy for comedy writing, Turner Smith still cannot believe she's the chosen one. All these powerful women are doing this project, and I was like, how do I get invited? She lets out a slight laugh before confessing earnestly, honest to God, I'm terrified. Queen and Slim follows a couple on the lam after a traffic stop leaves a police officer dead. The pair flee Cleveland, heading south, following a sneak peek of the project during the 2019 Essence Festival. Waithe shut down comparisons with Bonnie and Clyde by explaining that she was more inspired by Set It Off's exploration of what happens when black folks must fight their way out of a corner. I just wanted to turn the tables a bit, where we keep breathing and the oppressor doesn't, Waithe says. I want to give voice to all the nameless, faceless men and women of color whose lives were unjustly taken by police officers who didn't make it home. The film also offers an intentional display of black love as feelings blossom between Turner, Smith, and Kaluuya. it's definitely not lost on me how beautiful that it is to see for the world and also for our community, reflects Turner Smith. Often it's the other way around, and what we see glorified as the standard of beauty is a woman who looks a little bit different than I do. And so to get to be in that position, to get to play queen, to know that there will be little black girls who look like me, who will see the film and be like, oh my God, look, somebody who looks like me. That makes me feel really awesome. Her co-star, Kahlua, attests to the Turner Smith star wattage, which makes it nearly impossible to hang out with the actress without people stopping her on the street. In some places, people would stop her and say, wow, you're beautiful. I've never really seen that happen before. She just has that magnetic quality, and she brought it all that, and she brought all that majesty, and it's just a joy to see. Same, Daniel, same. And so the next article that we're going to cover is Get Up, Stand Up. The largest LGBTQ and advocacy group in America has a new leader, and he's ready to elevate the conversation on black queer issues. So Alphonso David is used to being the first. While working for the governor of New York, he became the first openly gay black man to serve as chief counsel and the first deputy secretary for civil rights that the state had ever had. Now in his new role as president of the Human Rights Campaign, he's making history once again as the first person of color to helm the nearly 40-year-old organization. The recently installed leader spoke with Essence about what it means to wield power in such an important space. Essence asked him, what does your new role as president of the Human Rights Campaign entail? And so Alphonso David's response is, I oversee a very large civil rights organization. The Human Rights Campaign does a variety of things. We work to make sure we elect candidates to office who support dignity and the equality of all people. We also back and draft legislation in all 50 states to make sure that we're protected under law. In addition to that, we work with communities all over the country to implement programs to make sure that people have resources and access to services that we provide. So what would you say is the best part of your job? I am in a role that is specifically tailored to achieve the North Star. My job is to make sure that we achieve equality for all people. Every day I wake up and I think about how I can get to that place. How do we get to a point where I'm treated equally regardless of my race? I'm treated equally regardless of the fact that I'm gay. I'm treated equally regardless of being African. Working to that point where we're all treated equally no matter what, who we are, that's the best part of my job. The next question to him from Essence was, what are some of the challenges you face on a daily basis? And Alphonso David's response is, we're living in a country with a federal administration that is trying to erase us, a federal administration that is seeking to make it so that I don't have any protections, meaning that a dry cleaner can discriminate against me because I'm gay. An employer can fire me because I'm gay. I can be thrown out of my apartment because I'm transgender, or I can be denied services at a restaurant because I'm lesbian. That reality is the most challenging aspect of my job. The next question to Alphonso David was, you are African, you are an immigrant, and you are gay. How has that combination presented obstacles for you throughout your life? And his response is, in our communities, we are forced to choose which identity is most important, which identity has more value. I reject that concept. I am African. I am an immigrant. I am gay. I am a civil rights lawyer. All of those identities have value, and I need to make sure that all of those identities are respected. There are days when I can't get a cab in New York City if I'm not in a suit because of my race. There are days when I'm denied services simply because I believe the person believes that I'm gay. I'm also treated differently in some cases because people realize I'm an immigrant. And the final question that Essence asked Alphonso David was, how can people who aren't in the LGBTQ plus community help to advocate for those who are. And his response is, I would first encourage people here and around the world to get involved in the electoral process and understand the importance of your vote in maintaining our democracy. We are fighting for the soul of our country. Second, I would encourage people of all races, all creeds, all colors to see beyond themselves. We have to make sure we're not only fighting for what affects us directly, but also what affects human dignity. The Trump administration is scapegoating different identities to try to separate us. Reject that philosophy. This is about equality. So we have to work to get pro-equality candidates elected in the 50 states. Lastly, people can contact our office and volunteer. We have a program at Historically Black Colleges and University in which we identify future LGBT leaders, young black and brown men and women who can embrace their sexuality and their gender identity and see a value in themselves, who can then go out in the world and mobilize. Help us to expand our programs. And this article was written by Tanya A. Christian. The next article that we're going to cover is What Matters? Black Women Speak Out. A survey conducted by the Black Women's Roundtable shows which issues concern black women the most. Black women continue to have an impact on the political landscape, particularly within the Democratic Party. And this year, the topics that matter the most to us have changed according to the 5th Annual Power of the Sister Vote Survey, which was released by the Black Women's Roundtable, BWR, an intergenerational public policy network conceptualized and formed by the National Coalition on Black Civic Participation in partnership with Essence. The survey, which polled 1,068 Black women representing a range of ages as well as diverse economic and education backgrounds, focused on which candidate participants would vote for if the election were held today. What black women consider to be a priority this election cycle, and what candidates have to do to earn their votes. Interestingly, the results reveal a chasm between the political perspective of black women, millennials, and Generation Zers, ages 18 to 34, and those ages 35 and up. While the older contingent continues to place its hopes in the centrism of former Vice President Biden, 25% younger black women, 18.9%, said they would vote for the more progressive Senator Bernie Sanders, which is a Democrat serving Vermont, if the 2020 presidential election were held today. Senator Kamala Harris, Democrat for California, comes in second with both groups, 15% and 17.1% respectively. And Senator Elizabeth Warren, Democrat from Massachusetts, comes in third at 12% and 13.7% respectively. Senator Cory Booker, Democrat for New Jersey, has struggled to gain traction even as the Democratic field narrows, 4% and 1.7% respectively. The survey finds that President Trump continues to receive an F for his job performance. Approximately 83% of black women polled give him a failing grade. What do black women want? So our priorities have shifted somewhat in 2019. Criminal justice policing reform is the number one issue, separated by a mere 1% from affordable health care, which comes in second place. In 2018, the top concern was hate crimes. Racism, according to 55% of those polled, that was up from 33% in 2017. While hate crimes, racism remains a key problem at number three this year. It has dropped 13 points from 2018 rather, and is now tied with equal rights, equal pay, which has risen 14 points as a concern from 2018. The picture changes when age is a factor. protecting the financial safety net, also known as Medicare, Medicaid, and Social Security, and reduced taxes for lower and middle-income families ranked as the top issues for older Black women. Polled, while 51% of Millennial and Generation Z respondents choose addressing the catastrophic rates of Black maternal morbidity and infant death as their top priority. Gun safety, gentrification, college affordability, and quality education, along with climate change and environmental injustice, round out the list of our most pressing concerns. Black women polled conveyed that they are concerned about the race and white supremacy, police violence against unarmed Black people, going unchecked by the justice system, and the increase of mass killings, primarily perpetrated by young white men targeting people of color, Jewish people, and others not welcomed by white nationalists, says Avis Jones D. Weaver, Ph.D., author and researcher and editor-in-chief for the 2019 BWR report. The Democratic Party has to regain Black women's trust. Our confidence in the Democrats, which has fallen in recent years, remains stagnant. Overall, 73% of Black women, the same as in 2018, identified Democrats as the party that best addresses their issues. However, 23.6% identify as independent or non-affiliated, and 0.01% as Republican. In contrast, only 45% of Black women ages 25 to 35 agree that the Democratic best represents their interests, while nearly one-third indicate that no party represents them. According to the 2017 Power of the Sister Vote survey, the Democratic Party experienced an 11% drop in our support from 2016. While the percentage of Black women who say neither Democrats nor the Republican Party represents their best interests increased by 1%, 21% in 2017 to 22% in 2018. While some of the current concerns have evolved depending on what Black women perceive to be more urgent, it is clear that we remain engaged in the political process and are fully invested in the emotional, physical, and financial health of Black communities, as well as the well-being of the nation as a whole. And this was written by Kirsten West Sabali, and she is the Essence Senior Editor of News and Politics. And I'm going to leave it right there because it looks like that we have actually run out of time for today's episode of Essence Magazine. Be sure to listen next time. We hope you've enjoyed it. I'm Nicole Hunter, and you have been listening to the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for a blind and print impaired audience. This broadcast is readily available as a podcast after the broadcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call 919-832-5138. So long until next time.